the surveillance goes bell, then this program focuses on a shift in consciousness that's happening in the world. And tonight, we're going to be talking about a specific incident, a case, a transformational occurrence that happened in Phoenix in, was it 1996 with Dr. Lynn Kitai? 97, huh?
That was the mass sighting.
The Phoenix Lights, yes. The Phoenix Lights and Dr. Lynn, who was a doctor at the time, had an awakening of a new reality, I would say. And it just changed your whole worldview. So you were a medical doctor, and we'll talk about what happened. You saw these lights and talk about how... Yes.
Yeah, actually without any interest or knowledge in the topic at all, 2 years before the mass sighting, which has become historic in the annals of human history, as well as ufology, on March 13th, 1997, 2 years prior in February of 1995, both my husband, who's also a physician, and I had a very close sighting to our home. We live mountainside in Paradise Valley, Arizona, which actually has a panoramic view of the city skyline, and we're pretty high on the mountain, and one of our windows in the bedroom is a window. So we're very familiar with what planes and helicopters and streetlights and car lights and even flares, which are deployed periodically, look like. This is really different. I happened to be taking a bath, and my husband was standing by the window and noticed a little below us, about 50, 75 feet off the desert landscape, which is very treacherous land. No one could possibly even stand there, were three amber orbs in a triangle formation, one on top and two closely aligned underneath, like a pyramid. And the reason I call them orbs is because the light did not extend outside the edge. And as soon as I saw it, I have to tell you, it was spectacular. There was nothing in my realm of reality that could relate to what I was seeing. And I thought to myself,
it was, though, if nothing...
I can hardly hear you. I'm sorry.
Can you not hear me? Can you hear me now
just
better?
A little bit.
Okay. But I'm just saying, and this is like a point that I think is so important, that if there's nothing in your reality that you can relate to and you see something like that, what did it do to you?
Good question. I was in awe, and my first reaction, because my life's work is community education on the reality of vital health issues, and I produce video and workbook curriculums for schools internationally, and my first thought was to get a video camera and get a picture of it, but it was downstairs, and I didn't want to miss anything. So it was so unusual that I tried to take everything in mentally. When you have that mental moment, the size, the shape, the color, and so forth, they were about 3 to 6 feet each, depending on how close they were. And they seemed to be only, 100 yards from our home. They were very close. And they were orbs, I mentioned, because the light did not extend outside the edge. It was self-contained, and the shape was an oval shape on its side, like an egg on its side. And there were three distinct objects, very closely aligned together, but there were three distinct objects. And the color within each orb was a uniform amber color throughout that didn't glare at all. Everything else out there glared, every other light. These did not. They were very mesmerizing, very soothing. And I thought to myself, if I don't get a picture of this, no one's going to believe it. And I ran to the closet to grab my 35 millimeter that I keep handy to take sunset shots, because I collect sunsets. And my husband calls me over. He says, get over here quick. One of them is disappearing. And I have to say, this next event was so miraculous in my life that it really changed my life. Because as I'm watching the top orb next to my husband, watching the same thing, it didn't budge at all. It started to dim, like a dimmer switch, but started it's very difficult to explain. It started to implode from the outside inwards, getting smaller and smaller and more mechanically, as if it was intelligently guided, and until it was a small dot, and then it was out. But I have to admit, and at the time I didn't, again, have anything to relate it to, but it felt as if it was still there, even though we didn't see it anymore. And I quickly stepped out on the balcony, shot a quick picture of the two lower orbs, and immediately noticed an eerie silence, as if time had stopped. It was really bizarre.
The thing that shifted you was that you felt it was there when you didn't see it? Was that, I mean, besides...
That was one of the things. I mean, I'll tell you the rest of the story, because as it unfolded, it even got more bizarre. Because as I'm standing there, watching, staring in this otherworldly feeling of time being stopped, I'm staring at the two lower orbs, and I have to admit, and I did not share this with a soul until after the mass sighting, but it felt like something was staring back at me. It just did, and something was watching, and I thought to myself, I was thinking, who are you? What are you? Do you know that I'm here? I'd love to meet you. And the next thing I remember, the left bottom orb started to disappear. And I quickly shot a picture of that. And anyone that's near a computer, if you want to get on the Phoenix Lights Network website, it's packed with information. But it's thephoenixlights.net. And go on the photo page.
I'm on that website, and I'm seeing these orange orbs. Are those actually the ones you shot?
Yes, they are. The first picture is the topography, which is very interesting, and if I can share this little anecdote with you. I've come not to believe in coincidence. 6 months before the mass sighting, I was invited to the Gila River Indian Reservation, which is actually very sacred ground situated in between the two major mountain ranges that surround the Phoenix South area. One is called South Mountain, and a little further back, a few miles, is the Estrella Mountain Range. And in between, in the basin in between, is the Gila River Indian Reservation, and they have one school, and they invited me to present my substance abuse prevention education program 6 months before the mass sighting. And so I got friendly with them, and they really don't talk to outsiders, but it was curious to me. And if you look at my pictures, and in science we look for repeatability, and you'll see that these phenomena, these Phoenix lights, keep popping up in the same area right where South Mountain and the Estrellas intersect. And I called them up after the mass sighting and said, did you happen to see strange lights on March 13th? My pictures keep showing these phenomena showing up there. And they started to giggle. And I said, is that funny? And they said, are you kidding? We've been looking up at them for centuries. We call them sky people, light beings. It's part of their culture. I had no idea. I mean, this was all new to me. But if you look at the first, and we can get into that if we have time, but that first picture shows the topography of where these phenomena keep showing up. And even when we were looking at the close orbs, if you look at the second picture, that second picture is the two orbs, the two bottom orbs that I caught. You can see the arrow looking at it. Do you see that?
If I go to photos, if I go to Phoenix
Lights. Go to thephoenixlights.net.
And then go to photos
on
the left
photos,
side.
The photo
I
page.
See the landscape, and then underneath there, yes.
And then the second picture is the first picture that I took in 95.
Yes.
What's really interesting, and the second picture is the last picture that I took. And that was the only picture that turned out at the time. But as I was watching the left bottom orb disappear, I clicked a picture, and I happened to catch one half disappeared and one still there. I mean, that picture is really profound because I happened to catch these phenomena in action. And what's really interesting, which I think that, you know, anybody certainly involved in IONS and who picks up the latest edition of my book, The Phoenix Lights, A Skeptic's Discovery, that we are not alone, for the first time in over a dozen years, I am sharing the analysis of those two pictures by respected and renowned Navy optical physicist Dr. Bruce Maccabee, who actually presented the case in 1999 at the 1999 International MUFON Symposium in Washington, D.C., as the first authenticated photographic evidence ever of missing time.
Of missing time? Wait, you mean missing time?
And I can tell you a little bit more about that if you'd like.
Yeah, because
how he came to that conclusion, because I would have had no idea. And we're getting a little bit off the track. I don't know if you want to get back to the mass sighting, but I stuck that in there because it's very interesting that I kept this private, because it is, I mean, talk about bizarre. As an afterthought, a year after the mass sighting, when I sent him other data, I stuck the first and the last picture in from the closed sighting, and not only did he notice that the same phenomena was in the background disappearing when the close orbs were disappearing, that I would also capture 2 months before the mass sighting, head on, turning into a V. And it was so unnerving, that sighting, because it was so massive and I hadn't had an explanation for 95, that I called around, found air traffic controllers at Sky Harbor International Airport who saw the same thing at the same time in Class B restricted airspace. This is 2 years later. January 23rd, 1997, in Class B restricted airspace, about 1,000 feet altitude, actually turning against the wind and then moving as a unit behind South Mountain. And they had no idea what it was. But Dr. Bruce McAbee actually analyzed these pictures and not only found that the same phenomena was in the background in the same location 2 years before the mass sighting, but also he said to me, how long was that sighting? And, you know, we remembered it as being only a couple minutes, 4 minutes tops. And he said, that's impossible. I said, what do you mean? Because he meticulously analyzed these. And he said, look at the skyline. And all you have to do, and I've said this right along, is look at the data. It speaks for itself. If you look at the skyline in the first picture, there are many groups of lights that are on in the first picture that are off in the last picture. And he said, that doesn't happen in just a couple minutes. And he had me do an experiment. He said, stand outside approximately where you were standing in February 95 and shoot the pictures of the skyline one night every hour, the next night every half hour, the next night every 15 minutes, and we'll see when the groups of lights start going off. Well, my husband called me out of a bath, which I usually take between 7 and 8 in the evening, so let's be conservative and say 8. The first groups of lights start going out at 9. The last picture is indicative of 10:30, 11 o'clock.
What time was it when you took the photo? You must have known.
Well, that's what I'm saying.
Time.
We don't know. This is, you know, if anybody wants to read the data, I now share it in my book. And also, if you go to the missing time page, you could read Dr. McAbee's 21-page report. But I got a little ahead of myself. I apologize. But while we were looking at it.
Don't apologize, because I was just, I mean, at the kind of memorial for the guy who created the missing time concept, Bud Hopkins, died recently, and there's a beautiful memorial for him this weekend. And missing time means that usually people are taken up in a craft for a certain amount of time, and they're brought back, and hours are missing. So do you think something happened to you?
Well, that's a really good question, and I have to say that according to Dr. McAbee, and reflecting on what has happened the last 15 years, that I've pushed my entire professional life aside to try to find a logical source and meaning for what I witnessed and photographed up close and personal, and then what happened 2 years later, not only 2 months before the mass sighting, but certainly with thousands of people throughout the state, has changed my life forever. So something may have happened, and you know what? It doesn't even matter. I'm for something, you know, the Native Americans, and I was going to go back to that, believe that these orbs are part of spirit world and their ancestors coming back to give them inspiration and comfort, and they even call the Estrella Mountains, Estrella means star in Spanish. They believe that it's the gateway to the stars. And if that is so, and these phenomena keep popping up, and again, if you look at my data that I continue to take prior to and after the mass sighting, the same phenomena keep popping up in the same location. Perhaps there is a portal or a gateway there. But to go back to your question, I really don't know, and it doesn't even matter. In fact, Bud Hopkins came up to Dr. McAbee after his presentation in 1999 and said, you know, are you trying to say that this person, because I was anonymous, I stayed anonymous for 7 years, and I asked Dr. McAbee when he wanted to present it, I said, hey, go for it. You're the one that discovered it. I would have never, ever realized such intricacy, and this is your baby. Just, I couldn't even wrap my head around it, to tell you the truth. Just don't mention my name. I wanted to stay anonymous, which I did for 7 years. But Bud Hopkins came up to him afterwards and said, are you trying to say that this person took a picture of a clock? And Dr. McAbee reflected a little, and he said, actually, that might be so. And the reason I'm sharing it at this point, because I did not in the first two editions of the book, is that quantum physics and quantum mechanics is starting to catch up and talk about other times and place, spaces, and other possibility of other dimensions and string theory and so forth. And if this data, and I have to say that that was one of the main reasons that I came forward in 2004, is after pushing my entire professional life aside, Alan, to try to find a logical explanation, I really went to extreme lengths. I mean, I went to the University of Arizona Optical Science Department, Consciousness Study Department, ASU, Arizona State University, Geology, Anthropology, Mathematics, Astronomy Departments, as well as the Brooks Institute of Photography. And across the board, no one could give me an answer to what I had documented. If anything, they were fascinated. And finally, after I started looking, I started finding the history was so fascinating, that this has been going on since human documentation began. Not only drawings in primitive prehistoric caves, but certainly in the Bible, these phenomena are mentioned, and 15th and 16th century frescoes with UFOs in the sky, and the Foo Fighters in World War II. Dr. Richard Haynes confirmed for me that what my husband and I saw up close was identical to these orbs that in twos or threes that would fly around the aircraft during World War II, and everybody thought that everybody else, you know, the other side had this advanced technology, and it wasn't until after World War II that everybody found out nobody has this advanced technology. They've been around for a long time.
But have you seen anything since the mass sightings? Oh, yeah.
Well, first of all, when I didn't see anything for 2 years until 2 months before the mass sighting, when I caught the same phenomena in the same location head-on turning into a V, and you can see those pictures as well. In fact, the second picture of that sighting is identical to what thousands of people described throughout the state on March 13th, which was either lights, as the air traffic controllers would describe to me, points of light totally equidistant from each other in a V formation over a mile wide that seemed to be attached to something, but they couldn't quite see what it was attached to, or actual craft. Now, many people saw an actual craft. In fact, on the website, thephoenixlights.net, if you go to the GAP page, G-A-P, there is so much fascinating data here, because after a 12-year compilation of hundreds and hundreds of credible reports from multiple people saying the same thing, Mike Tanner and several other investigators, Bill Hamilton was one, actually got together and compiled 8 or 9 different craft that people saw statewide. See, people have a misconception. The media has really given some mis- and disinformation out there by trying to make it simple and telling people that it lasted, you know, only an hour and a half or whatever, and that there were two events. Actually, there were many events. And if you go on the GAP page, G-A-P, you'll see the 8 or 9 different craft that people saw statewide. Now, whether it was one craft that could morph, and we're talking a mile to 2 mile wide craft with either different lights or different configuration, and it's fascinating when you look at the pictures. Larry Lowe, very talented illustrator, illustrates them. In fact, one of them blew me away because when I saw it, because it consists of multiple lights, but each light is made up of 3 lights, and I actually found footage that was taken in St. Petersburg, Russia, 1 month before our mass sighting on February 19th, 1997, of the same exact phenomena, which is, you know, this is worldwide. This is happening worldwide, which I also learned, which I had no idea. it was happening worldwide. But anyway, on March 13th, 1997, very clear night, thousands of people statewide, beautiful evening, looking up at the sky purposely for a glimpse of the Hale-Bopp comet that was very clear in the northwest sky. Also caught a glimpse of this mile to 2 mile wide, either formation of lights equidistant from each other, or a craft traversed very low altitude. And this started, by the way, at 5:30 p.m., and we have reports from New Mexico as well, and continued throughout the entire state until 5:30 the next morning. I have a Boeing crew that reported to me that as they were coming into work early that next morning, they saw this craft hovering over the tarmac while they were coming into work. So this was happening for many, many hours, and there were many things happening throughout the state. The orb formations, some people saw these orbs detach from the main object, go out into the environment, and then redock with it. Other people saw this craft or a phenomena pass right over their heads. I mean, we're talking rooftops. Some of the people said they could have thrown a stone at it. It was so close. Other people saw windows with beings at the windows, actually. And what was so eerie to everyone is that it was totally silent. Totally silent. And even, I didn't even displace the air, and some people saw it actually take off at a tremendous speed, at blink speed, no sonic boom. So we're talking incredibly advanced technology here that until today has never been explained or reenacted. I'm sorry?
But no, there's been no mass sightings like that in Phoenix since that one in 97.
No, but there have been occurrences since, but not as massive as that one. Actually, the year after, there was also another very interesting sighting that we have footage from north, south, east, and west, because I was seeing them for a couple days before that. Was the first time that the Phoenix lights, quote-unquote, had come back since the mass sighting, and I alerted the other videographers from the night of March 13th, because there were only a handful of us that got video that night, and people ask all the time, well, why weren't people taking pictures? Well, first of all, we didn't have cell phones. Most people didn't have cell phones in 97, and those that did, they did not have cameras. And when you're out and about, you usually don't carry your camera with you. So, you know, that's one of the reasons. The other is that those that did have a camera for some reason tried to take pictures of this massive thing which blacked out the stars, and the pictures just didn't turn out. And actually, there's footage from days before that I was taking and that several other people were taking that's really awesome. I mean, they look like spinning balls of energy. It's really nothing that you've ever seen before.
So the big question, there's the facts, and of course people saw something absolutely. I have no doubt that there was a phenomena that's unexplainable, and perhaps one day it will be explainable, but I'm also interested in how this changed your consciousness, because I'm putting on a conference in New York with FIONS, the Friends of the Institute of Noetic Science, October 21st, 22nd, and 23rd, and we're talking specifically about UFOs and its effects on how we cognize reality. I'm also writing about that as well. So I'm interested, particularly someone from you, very grounded, medical, matter-of-fact, realist background, what that did to your way of thinking and people in general when they start to integrate this type of phenomena. So,
you came to the right place, Al, I have to tell you, because that's been my main focus of study and really impacted me personally. And I found impacted many other people as well. And I'll be talking about that actually this coming weekend. Friday night, we're showing our internationally award-winning documentary at the Pennsylvania MUFON International Conference in Philadelphia. And then on Sunday, I'll be lecturing and sharing Beyond the Phoenix Lights, which to me is really poignant and really needs to be shared. Because, yes, the data is poignant in itself and powerful, and it speaks for itself. And to this day, I have to tell you, even though the military, and there's a long story between the time the mass sighting happened, and 3 years later when they tried to reenact it with a flare deployment by three Air National Guards and totally failed. I mean, it was a joke. So they have never been reenacted or explained. But what really got me, and I think you and your listeners will find this interesting, and I'm going to be discussing this as well this weekend at the Pennsylvania annual conference, is when I started interviewing witnesses, there were a number of them. And by the way, astronaut Edgar Mitchell is in our documentary. And we had long discussions, obviously, about this as well. He's wonderful and really shares some poignant thoughts. But what was really curious to me is that a number of witnesses had near-death experiences as children that was reawakened by the mass sighting. And I found that really interesting because I did too. I had a very profound life-altering experience when I was 8 years old. And I have to tell you, I was so taken aback when other people were telling me that their near-death experience was also reawakened by the mass sighting, that I thought, wow, could there possibly be a connection between all unexplained phenomena, be it near-death experience, out-of-body experience, or unexplained aerial phenomena that have a mystical light associated with the experience? So it took me off onto a new road after I was investigating the history and finding out this is happening worldwide in UK and Hudson Valley and Lubbock Lights and Belgium and so forth. Now I'm finding out there's university studies being done. The Omega Project, I don't know if you heard about that one, it's about a 4-inch thick book, if you can get through it, by Dr. Kenneth Ring, Dr. Raymond Fowler, as well as Dr. Bruce Grayson, and others.
But Lynn, what is the connection?
Wait, I'm going to tell you. I'm getting there. That we're finding a connection between all unexplained phenomena that I was finding as well, not only in the experience itself. And I lay that out very simply in the book with you know, feeling the out-of-body and seeing beings and the mystical light and other very interesting aspects of each one is very similar when you really look at the data. But what really got me, Alan, what really got me and touched me deeply, because it had touched me deeply not only as a child, but certainly the Phoenix Lights did as well, is the positive after effect that happens to a person who truly experiences an unexplained phenomena, whatever it is. And I started calling all unexplained phenomena UPS, UPS, up, because it is an up. Not only is there an awakening, there's an enlightenment that takes place deep to the soul within of an individual that wakes them up, that really connects them to the universe and to the earth and to each other so much more intimately than they could have ever imagined. And it's changed people's life dramatically here in Arizona. It still is. I mean, there are people that changed their eating habits to vegetarian. There's others that went into the peace movement or the environmental movement. And even those, and it's a choice. I mean, everybody comes from a different background, from a different upbringing, from a different belief system. Some people can't deal with it. Some people don't want to deal with it. And that's okay. Everyone in their own time. But most people that experience the Phoenix Lights were touched forever in a very positive, very powerful way.
Well, but it seems like there's a deeper connection in the unexplained and the unknown, like it's connected because we're become part of the unknown, but I'm just
it also wakes, and that's one of the things that I found too, which I think, you know, certainly relates to ions in a big way, is that it makes you realize that we are spiritual beings. And the message,
How do seeing lights in the sky make you realize you're a spiritual being?
Because you know that you're not alone. You know you're not alone, and you know that you have so much more positive potential to make this world a better world. I mean, that's the message here. That's what people come away with. When you read the near-death experience literature time and time again, and Paul Puri, who wrote several best-selling books with Dr. Raymond Moody, and Dr. Melvin Morse, actually wrote the foreword to my book. I met him 2 days before the mass sighting, which was very interesting, and he got to follow the story with me. And we've had long discussions about this. I mean, certainly near-death experiencers come back with a new knowledge and with a new worldview, and come back with a purpose. And I have to say, after the mass sighting, I had the purpose and urgency to search out a logical explanation. But once I had a 750-page journal of incredibly credible data, that in good conscience, as an educator and as a scientist, I just couldn't stick in a drawer. I had to do a lot of soul searching myself to whether I was going to come forward with this, and certainly it was precarious.
I totally agree with you about everything you're saying. I was just questioning you because what I'm trying to do with this program is understand new realities, and it seems like people do have a new worldview because suddenly you realize the worldview we've been fed is not real. It's not
true. Exactly. In fact, I wanted to call the book the new reality. That was the title I wanted to use, because it is a new reality. I mean, we've been told or taught or whatever that our reality is like this little box. And in fact, I'm working now that the documentary and the book has gotten lives of their own. I'm going back to my passion of youth education, and I'm working on a comprehensive curriculum called Out of the Box that will address all these things.
I've been doing PowerPoint demonstrations about opening people to new realities and actually using art and a lot of types of objects that push our perceptions to see, to cognize new things. So I'm with you on that. But I'm just curious, like, you had a sighting, but is it possible to talk to someone like you were before you had these experiences and try to convince them that this is real? I mean, when you weren't open, were you?
Well, I have to say, Alan, that as a physician, one must be open to anything. I mean, that's part of the job, and part of being a physician is being open-minded, and that's the first step. And now, a healthy skeptic. I was always a healthy skeptic. And again, I mean, not only did I push my entire professional life aside, but I was looking for a logical explanation. I still am. I have never said what these things are, only that they are. And it's time we get this topic out in the open, and we address it, and we accept it, and we study it, so we can find out who is driving these things and also move forward in our own evolution. I think we're right at the precipice of going into our next evolution. Not only is our DNA really advancing at high speeds from scientific data, but our mind is too, and our consciousness is too. And these events, and I do believe that these events, like the Phoenix Lights, and I think that's, you know, not only did they want us to know that they're here, and let us know that they're in a very non-threatening, caring way, because it's almost 15 years in March. March 13th is 15 years. There has not been one report, and I'm pretty intimately involved with this whole investigation, not one report of harm, threat, or abduction associated with the Phoenix Lights. And that in and of itself is very telling, especially when similar phenomena are now being seen worldwide and documented on film. I mean, now the Internet has changed the whole picture, which is wonderful. In fact, the Phoenix Lights was the first mass sighting that had chat rooms. And now people can just, you know, post something. In fact, I on my own Facebook page, and anyone that wants to join us at Phoenix Lights Network, that would be wonderful. People will contact me as they're seeing something and say, you know, is anybody else seeing this? Which is, you know, that I think is the next step for us, is to really get on board and say, hey, most things can be explained. Let's be real. Most things can be explained. Only a very small percentage of things cannot. But just because we don't have the technology yet to definitively define what these things are, it doesn't mean they're not real. We may just be looking on the AM dial for an FM frequency.
Right. I mean, there are people who do, of course, report abductions and, I wouldn't say harm, but, you know, the whole...
I have to say that that's not my expertise, and I don't even go there because I don't understand it, and, you know, that's a whole other picture that I has a big question mark for me. What I do understand...
Your experience is something different.
It's definitely contact. There was some kind of contact, and... I'm okay with it. I mean, look, if I can share with you, when I did have my near-death experience, and again, I never shared this with a soul until I came out with my book in 2004, because I thought it was really important to share the rest of the story and to let people know that they're not alone. And as a physician, just knowing that people are assured that they're not crazy is healing, and also sharing. Sharing is very cathartic. It's really important, because if it festers, and I can't even tell you the thousands of emails I've gotten from people who have never shared their story, even if it can be explained, it's real to them. And just sharing your story with one other person is really important. So that was really important to me, that people knew that they're not alone. But when I had my near-death experience, I actually met three giant beings in glowing white robes with hoods. I could not see their faces. I tried to see their faces above the earth. And ever since then, and I have to tell you, and I hope people will pick up the book and read the experience, because it was pretty awesome and amazing. And I came back as an 8-year-old with a maturity that of a 40-year-old. I mean, I just knew things at that point and knew that I was not alone, and knew that they are with me, and I've trusted they've been with me. So to answer your earlier question, yes, I've been open, but a healthy skeptic.
Right. So you're saying sort of there is an interdimensional quality to this, they are physical. You saw physical lights, obviously, but
right,
there's
right.
something that transcends
right.
our physical plane that touches people with these other non-physical types of experiences.
Right, and I really believe that all these ups, all these unexplained phenomena experiences are touching one person at a time. And how that person interprets it and lets it affect them is up to them. It is a choice. We do have free will. But if you go at it with an open heart and an open mind, there are miraculous things that can happen. I mean, suddenly you start realizing serendipities, and I mean, there's a whole host of things that you realize that the reality we've been told is not the reality that is. And that's why, at this point, I am sharing the missing time data, because maybe that will help in as far as raw data to open the door. Scientists actually take a look at it. And I hope that happens someday. but the fact is, it's out there.
I mean, of course, the government is quiet about it. They've kept their secrets. But don't you think it's time that it's just out in the open? I mean, there's less of a laugh factor when it's mentioned in the news. Something is changing, and maybe disclosure is a 200-year process like the Copernican Revolution. But why don't we just come out? I mean, there's obviously somebody or organizations behind this information not being out.
Well, I think you're absolutely right on, Alan, and that's why I had to do what I'm doing, and I had to come forward, because I think it's too important not to share. And if people will just look at the data, if I can be a credible voice so people actually look at the data, I'm not trying to convince anybody of anything. I compiled the data. I went to extreme lengths to have it explained to me. It is what it is. And if people just look at it, you have to be impressed with the credibility of not only the Phoenix Lights, but when you go back in history and you see how these phenomena have been with us since human documentation began, then you start to see the story unfold, and you start to realize that, hey, maybe we have blinders on, and it's time to take the blinders off. And, you know, I give credit to those out there that are trying to get disclosure from government and military. This is a team effort. Everybody, you know, comes with their own expertise, and everybody helps in their own way. But in my way, I can only help in the grassroots way, and that's to share, you know, what happened here, the details of what happened here with the Phoenix Lights, in both the book and the documentary, and now in the classroom. I mean, there is nothing in our history books about this, and kids thirst for this. In fact, that's what prompted me to do the documentary. I had gone back to work to help put our younger son through medical school, who, by the way, is in the documentary. He had a couple of sightings with us, and I was chief clinical consultant at the Arizona Heart Institute Wellness and Imaging Center while I was trying to figure out what to do with my 750-page journal, and I started paring down the best of what I found to finally 230 pages, and then had to decide, you know, what am I going to do with this, and decided to come forward, which I finally did with the book in 2004, and then because of my background as a video curriculum producer, I really wanted to make a film, but I didn't have any time. I was working 7 to 7 at the Arizona Heart Institute and radio programs like this into the night and Barnes & Noble tours, and I'm going to be at Barnes & Noble if anybody's in Philadelphia on Saturday, the 15th at 1 p.m., also lecturing and book signing, Center City, Barnes & Noble. And I had no time, but a couple of parents had seen me at Barnes & Noble and invited me to their middle school. And here were 200 middle school students. You could hear a pin drop. This is the last period of the class. The teachers couldn't believe it. They thirst for this knowledge. They have nothing. They have nothing, and they believe. They want information. So now, you know, I am going full steam ahead to develop a comprehensive curriculum. In fact, Richard Dolan is helping out with the history line, and I have some wonderful, wonderful professors at ASU working with the math, senior math professors, working on crop circles, and it's really going to be cool.
I have some great stuff about the understanding of new realities that I'll also love to contribute there. But
That would be wonderful, because that's another thing, Alan. I'm glad you brought that up, because I am totally open. Again, this is a team effort, and this is a grassroots effort. That's where I think disclosure is going to come. As more and more people educate themselves, as more and more people, because you don't have to have an up experience to have the positive transformation. All you need to do is have an open heart and an open mind and learn about it. And certainly many people are seeing things and documenting them on film and sharing them. And you mentioned the ridicule factor. I mean, I can't tell you how horrible. I mean, it was horrific what was happening to the people here who came forward, especially the councilwoman Frances Barwood. I mean, it was a travesty. I was so happy that I had stayed anonymous, just doing my homework and, you know, doing an investigation, because the ridicule when I came forward in 2004 was really at a high pitch. I mean, it's still out there a little bit, giggle factor and whatever, but we've really come full circle. We have come so far since then because of the Internet, I think, because more and more people are sharing and are saying, hey, what's going on here? There's something out there, and other countries, as we know, other countries are coming forward with thousands of UFO files. I mean, France and Belgium and Mexico and Brazil and Argentina.
Lynn, what do you say to people that say, so what if these things are out there? How does it affect my life? What do you say
to those
people?
That's a good question, too. You know what? Everybody in their own time. Some people can't deal with this. They really can't deal with it or don't want to, and that's okay. That's okay. The information is out there if they want to learn and they want to grow, because this is a new reality and this is where we're going. I mean, we're not alone in this universe. I mean, let's be real, okay? I mean, first of all, the Hubble telescope has told us, you know, just in the past few decades, it's changed science and gravity and everything else. And that's another thing that's very exciting to me, is that CERN just reported that they have a particle that's faster than the speed of light. I mean, if that's true, then that blows the whole, you know, Einstein's relativity theory. And maybe my data for the missing time is really important. We'll see. But on the other side of that, I mean, you know, our galaxy, okay, our galaxy, about 14 billion years old, our solar system is only 4 to 6 billion years old. It's a very young solar system. And so when you look at the whole picture, I mean, there are scientists now postulating that there could be sentient, intelligent beings out there billions of years ahead of us. And now we know there's other galaxies out there, too. I mean, come on, let's be real.
And the whole idea of parallel universes.
Right.
Thank you. I mean, let's
I think that's a big part of this, by the way.
Because this is kind of stuff I really like to go deep into. Maybe I'll see you in Philadelphia.
Oh, that would be wonderful. Please, please, anyone that's in the area, and I would love to see you there. I'm going to be showing the documentary Friday evening at the Sheraton in the Northeast. It's at PennsylvaniaMUFON.com. You can look up the information. And then Saturday, I'm going to be doing Barnes & Noble book signing and lecture and Q&A at Rittenhouse Square downtown. Barnes & Noble there at 1 o'clock. And at 1 o'clock on Sunday, I'll be presenting Beyond the Phoenix Lights. And I have to tell you, if you come, you're going to be freaked out at some of the data I'm going to be sharing there.
Very excited because, well, then let's definitely do another interview coming up, okay?
That sounds great. Thank you so much. I really appreciate it. And that's what's really important here too, Alan, is that we get this out in the open and that we share and, you know, raise awareness. Just raise awareness and let people decide for themselves what they want to do with it. The information is there if they look at it, and I hope they look at the website too, thephoenixlights.net.
Yeah, I mean, thephoenixlights.net is where all your information, people can find out when you're speaking. Because people like you, who came from sort of, I would say, a straight, normal world, and then being so enthusiastic about this phenomena is what I think will happen to the planet at some point. You know, I think we all will be sort of at that turning point in human history where we'll be excited about our connection to the rest of the cosmos and we'll rise up out of our little petty human dramas and embrace something bigger than ourselves.
I hope so, because again, the message, the biggest message of all that people are getting from all unexplained phenomena, and I think you know this, is to wake up to what we're doing to ourselves and our planet before it's too late.
Thank you. I'm talking to
keep looking up.
Thank you. It's all looking up. I've been talking to Dr. Lynn Katai, and she's doing a weekend in Philadelphia coming up for MUFON, Pennsylvania. There's also a UFO weekend happening in New York, October 21st, 22nd, and 23rd. You can find out about that at the newrealities.com website or the FIONS, FIONS.org website. And stay tuned. Another brief guest coming up. And thanks for listening. Okay, welcome back to New Realities. Also coming up on the October 21st, 22nd, 23rd weekend in New York is the big holiday special, the New Life Expo, which greets the spiritual community in New York twice a year, and have a guest on my show, the founder and creator of the New Life Expo, Mark Becker. Welcome, Mark.
Hello, Alan Seinfeld.
Well, this one particularly is quite a rare event. I mean, you have some new people coming to New York, particularly David Wilcox. That's always exciting. You want to tell us a little bit about him and what he brings to the table?
Well, sure. You know, as you said, it is on October 21, 22, 23, and we have over 200 speakers, and this is the first time that David has come. He's just debuting with his new book, The Source Field Investigations. And, you know, what David talks about is I guess, you know, the universal mind, meaning that everything that was, everything that is culminating just about now. That nothing was a myth, and all these myths were planned, meaning the pyramids were planned for a certain reason, the crop circles were planned for a certain reason. And the whole consciousness of the planet is a universal mind, which is sort of culminating at around 2012. You know, I mean, 2012 is auspicious. Also, right now, the end of this year, we're going from the Piscean age to the Aquarius age. And but David, again, is just one of the many speakers. We have two panels on 2012 with Judy Satori, with Sean David Morton. David, of course, is on the panel. And, I love that David is coming.
Yeah, no, I think
if you read this issue of New Life magazine, we have a big article on David and the Sourcefield investigations, which everybody should buy the book. It's an incredible book.
Well, maybe I'll have David on the show at some point, but just to tell people, the New Life Expo is at the New Yorker Hotel.
It's at the Hotel New Yorker. This is our 21st year. We have over 15,000 people come. We have incredible panels. In fact, Alan Seinfeld on Sunday will be narrating our sensuality and sexuality panel, which is always a winner. Don't forget to see Alan do that. We make it affordable for everybody. Most shows charge $100 or $50 or $300. You come into the New Life Expo for $20 a day. In advance, $15. We can do a whole weekend in advance for $30. And that means you can see 10 lectures every hour for 3 days on everything possible: metaphysical, spiritual, environmental, human potential, alternative medicine, holistic health, anything to open up your mind to all possibilities, to help you reach your maximum potential.
But the other big part about the expo is the exhibitors. You know, they really make the show not just a forum, but, you know, like a fair. And you always have some great people there.
Well, you know, the beautiful part of the exhibitors is we have almost 200 exhibitors. But they're not exhibitors only from Brooklyn and Queens and Manhattan. They're coming from New Zealand. They're coming from Australia. They're coming from India. They come from England. They come from Hawaii. They're from Canada. So from all over the planet, they converge here. And they converge here twice a year. You know, the next time is in March. But it's next weekend. I mean, it's October 21, 22, 23. If you've never been to the New Life Expo, it will change your life. It will just change your life.
Why do you think you've been so successful when other people, in a way, haven't been, you know, as fortunate?
Yeah. You know, Alan, so many people have asked me that question, and the reason is because this is my life, and this is what I do. And, you know, I've always been on the pulse of it. And in 1975, I created the first yoga center in New York City, Serenity. I created the first holistic health center. So it was the first place you could buy herbs in bulk or tinctures or extracts or wheatgrass juice or just about anything that you take for granted now in a health food store. We were the first ones to do it. It was the first place where Reiki was taught, where polarity was taught. And what happened is the brochure for the yoga center became New Life magazine. And the Holistic Health Center actually became a New Life Expo. So it was a natural progression, and this is what I do, where other people, if automobile tires became the next big thing, they would do an automobile tire expo. But I feel that I'm a master, and I felt that I came on this planet to find as many leaders as I can to help raise the consciousness of the planet and just bring it out to the people in a really affordable way. And again, even if you can't afford the $15 or $20, you can come and volunteer and come into the expo for free. So we don't turn anybody away, and we can use all the volunteers that we can get.
Well, that's a good thing. I mean, because, you know, this is the message that needs to be brought to the masses. And the more people that are waking up, at least to even a small degree of what happens at the expo, that starts to affect the collective in a bigger way. So it's very exciting that it is for the people, this kind of
thing. And I appreciate it. And the people are the most important part. I mean, 15,000 people that actually come to meet each other. I know people that you know, reach me in the street and say, "Oh, Mr. Becker, thank you. I met my wife there. Oh, Mr. Becker, thank you. I got engaged there." So people come and meet each other. I mean, where else can you meet as many people as that are into what you're into?
Right. And you know what's really exciting is this cruise that's coming up in October. Tell us a little bit about that.
Well, that's in 2012, October 6th, 2012. We're going to be doing a 2012 cruise. So that's a little over a year. No, it's less than a year. And Alan will be there. We're going to Cozumel. We're going to Belize, the two of the Mayan structures there. And then we're going out to even the Grand Caymans. But it'll be 7 days where we can actually all merge together and play around with 2012.
That's,
you know, another thing I want to say about the expo is that, yeah, you know, we have four restaurants this time. We have three raw food restaurants and one vegetarian restaurant to serve breakfast, lunch, and dinner there. And we have a half-price bookstore. So actually, bookstores come to our expo and buy their books for half price at our expo. And you can do that, too.
The other major figure you usually have is Sean David Morton. He's probably the most controversial figure that comes to the expos. And
Sean is exciting. 20 years ago, he said, Mr. Becker, please let me lecture your expo. He said, I'll be your biggest speaker. And sure enough, he has been. And what he does, he combines Nostradamus, the Bible, Da Vinci, and he just prophesizes things that are going to happen, and most of the time they come true. I mean, he predicted the World Trade Center at my, he predicted 9/11 at my expo. And besides Sean, we have so many other people that actually bring people back from the dead, talk to the dead. Whatever your flavor is, on any kind of level, you will find it.
I love all this stuff. This is what, you know, I've devoted my life to. And you know, the common factor in all the stuff that you have there and all the stuff I'm doing, UFOs, healing, is that it's about a new reality. It's about waking up people to a new way of looking at the world. And that's what they can find, particularly at the expo, something that will change their life. It really will.
Well, you know, most people use 2 to 3% of your brain. So if the expo can make you or help you to utilize the percentages of the brain that you don't use and realize that there's so much more around that you don't see or don't feel or don't hear yet. And before we leave, I don't know if we're allowed to do websites or phone numbers, but it's important.
Give us all the information. We can do anything.
Oh, great. Yeah, because if you pre-registration closes next Wednesday. Next Wednesday at the 19th at 6 o'clock. So if you pre-register, then you even get it even cheaper. There are discounts, and you won't have to wait in line. And so the phone number is 516-897-0900. So 516-897-0900. If you go to newlifeexpo.com, you'll see the whole brochure online, all the speakers, all the special events, all the panels, all the workshops, all the exhibitors. So you can find the newlifeexpo.com. You can call the 516-897-0900. You can pre-register. You can volunteer. You can call us just to say, hey, you know, I heard you on Alan's show. And listen to Alan's show whenever, because this goes on all year. I mean, the expo is only a few times a year, but Alan is on all year.
Thank you.
He'll fill your mind with all possibilities. So
thank you.
He's a new reality, and I'm a new life.
Your new life and your new reality. But thank you for that plug. But the thing I am excited about is, and what I've been hosting and we started at together, is this sexual panel, and we've been doing this for the last 5 years, and those are some of the most intelligent, honest, upfront, clear discussions that I've ever had with anybody, and a lot of people have healings and breakthroughs in those seminars, in that particular seminar, because it's a really honest way of looking at sexuality, and that will be happening on Sunday night. I'll be hosting it with some of the top people in the field. We have a couple of new people on the panel this year. We have Lori Grace, who will be talking about sexuality from a level of communication, compassionate communication. Who else do we have on the panel this year? We have Sam Gittle, who's talking. He's coming from the One Taste philosophy, which we'll get into there. And we'll have Juanita Calderon, a lovely Juanita. Do you know Juanita's work, Mark?
Juanita's really great. I mean, Juanita is a shaman. Her parents were shamans. They're from Colombia. And she really brings out the woman in a woman.
Right.
So she's really important. So it'll be very special on the panel. So that's important. She brings out the woman in a woman. I think Maya Jill Fleischman will be there.
Yes, she's an old friend of mine, Maya, and she is wild, and she has some incredible stories to tell as a tantrika priestess. So, but the thing about Juanita that I like so much is that she's from her tradition of her grandmother's passed down the secrets of the womb, of the intensity of a womb, of the woman's special energies that are carried inside every woman. And she is teaching about this, and I think that will really add an extra dimension to this particular panel. So that panel.
Also, don't forget to tell them that if you come an hour before the panel,
yes,
you'll be able to see Alan in person, because Alan will be giving his own lecture. So Sunday, on the 21st, the panel starts at 6 o'clock, and Alan will be giving his lecture at 5 o'clock on crop circles.
October 23rd.
October 23rd, Sunday.
Right.
And also come see me. I'm giving a lecture on Saturday, the 22nd, on a Renaissance man. And basically what it is I'm going to show people how they could start using more of their brain. Because, you know, in 75, when I was telling people that we're going to be using water purifiers and air purifiers, and telling people that you're going to drink bottled water, and telling people we're going to all be doing yoga and herbs, they thought I was a kind of a little bit crazy. But what it is that you have to use more of your brain to visualize what's going to be happening in the future.
So what's going to be happening in the future now?
Show people how they can actually fine-tune that a little bit.
So can you tell us what is in the future for us now in about 20 years?
Well, you know, from all the different 2012 and people that I've met, it's just a very exciting time for us. And it's a time where we're going to make a new shift. And the new shift is going to be just raising consciousness, just seeing things on a different level, just being able, love, of course, love is where it is, but really realizing the spirituality of the love, that we are all one. And honestly, if we don't get it together ourselves, which you will, there are so many other people out there that are going to come down here and help us.
Well, I think so. I was just at the Wall Street rally. That is a wild, wild scene. I recommend going down to Wall Street to check out that revolution in the making, you know.
Well, it's growing and growing, and it's about time. You know, I mean, myself, I got tear gas in the 60s in Berkeley. And, you know, it's been really dead for 40 years. I mean, the children, nobody has been protesting, and everything's been happening in the last 40 years. I mean, I can't believe the Iraqi war, the Afghan war. The administrations have been really smart by not pulling the draft. So I think this is the first major protest that's not war-related, that's not draft-related, because people are getting fed up, and that's part of the consciousness raising. That's part of the change.
Thanks, Mark. Thanks for being a guest on New Realities, and again, the Expo.
Thank you again, but the Hotel New York are very important. It's on 34th and 8th. It's 34th Street and 8th Avenue. Again, it's October 21, 22, 23. If you want to pre-register, it's 516-897-0900. Or go to www.newlifeexpo.com. Visit Alan. Visit myself. Say hello to all of us. And God bless you. And thank you, Alan. Thanks a lot.
Thanks. Always good to see you. I think it's going to be a great show. Thanks for everything, Mark. And I'll talk to you.
You're my brother.
You're listening to the first part of Dr. newrealities.com. Email me at newrealities@earthly.net. And thanks for listening.
In the fire. Waking up in the middle of my life. Nothing's what it seems. The fire.